Hello, and welcome to this PER Spectives Continuing Education Podcast, created by healthcare professionals for healthcare professionals. PER is a leader in healthcare education and offers free accredited medical education programs in a variety of accessible formats at gotoper.com. Optometrists play a critical role in first-line screening and monitoring of patients with neovascular age-related macular degeneration, or NAMD, and diabetic macular edema, or DME. Routine optical coherence tomography, or OCT, is an important tool in detecting ocular disease at an early stage. Where patients require more advanced care, optometrists refer them to retina specialists. Let's hear Dr. Mohammad Rafatari and Dr. Farhina Ali review the role of optometrists in managing retina disease, the role of OCT in the diagnosis and monitoring of retina disease, and the circumstances where patients with retina disease require referral.
So optometrists play an essential role in management of patients, which include diagnosis, treatment, ongoing care of various conditions affecting the retina and not retina diseases. Here are some outlines in the role in this area. Screening and detection. Optometrists often are the first line eye care professionals that the patients, whether they're symptomatic or asymptomatic, seek care from. The majority of optometric offices are equipped with advanced diagnostic instrumentation such as OCT, fundus photography, functional testing like visual field and electrophysiology. And also optometrists have the expertise and the knowledge to diagnose various retina and non-retinal ocular diseases. You know, retinal diseases such as AMD and diabetic retinopathy, which are very common, are often found by clinical examination and use of this diagnostic test. Through early detection and optometrists, identifying these diseases and intervention, we can have better outcome for the patients. In treatment and management, optometrists can provide some initial treatments based on the scope of practice, based on the condition. Optometrists can often offer lifetime or lifestyle educational material. They also play a crucial role in management of systemic conditions such as diabetes and hypertension that have retinal diseases and co-manage these patients with their primary care providers and other specialists. Finally, in diagnosis and referral, so optometrists play a crucial role in diagnosing these conditions and when appropriate to refer these patients in a timely fashion to retina specialists.
OCT has revolutionized the disease that we can see at the level of the macula that may require treatment as compared to examination techniques that had been used in years prior. So the OCT paired with intravitreal anti-VEGF treatments are the foundation of much of the care delivered in retina practices today.
Optical coherence tomography plays a crucial role in diagnosis and monitoring retinal disease. It is a non-invasive imaging technique that provides high-resolution cross-sectional images and analytic information, allowing visualization and analysis of the structure of the retina in detail. In detection of diabetic macular edema and neovascular AMD, I can, you know, venture to say that OCT is a standard of care in detection of these conditions. So just consider the fact in diabetic macular edema, the classification or the language has changed from the old EDTRS language of clinically significant macular edema or CSME to now centered and non-centered involved diabetic macular edema based on the OCT detection. So that alone tells you how important is OCT in detection of these diseases. OCT also plays a very crucial role in monitoring these patients, whether the treatment is observation by follow-up of the patients or those patients undergoing treatment to see the effectiveness of the treatment. So overall speaking, OCT has revolutionized the field of eye care, providing detailed and non-invasive imaging of the retina. And the ability of visualize the retinal structure and have this analytic information from it, the metrics that you get from OCT evaluation has really done a paradigm shift in retinal disease detection and management.
Any concern for active exudation in neovascular AMD or diabetic macular edema should be referred to the retina specialist for potential treatment. Often this is based off of OCT machines that the optometrists have in their offices, but a decline in vision in patients with either macular degeneration or diabetic retinopathy, even in the absence of OCT that is otherwise unexplained, would warrant referral, specifically in those offices without the OCT technology.
I would start by saying that patients with diagnosis of neovascular AMD and diabetic macular edema should be referred to a retinal specialist regardless of the circumstance. So according to the AOA's, American Optometric Association's, preferred practice patterns on diabetic retinopathy, patients with DME should be referred to a retinal specialist within 2 to 4 weeks, if not earlier. Neovascular AMD is more critical, so these patients should be referred within 24 to 48 hours. If an OD suspect the presence of these diseases and cannot confirm it, I would also say that the patient should be referred to a retinal specialist. I would also add determination of the existence of these conditions should be by proper dilated fundus exam at the slit lamp with the fundus lens and including the diagnostic tests such as OCT, OCTA, and in some rare cases, angiography. Relying on patients' symptoms or lack of visual acuity and visual function testing may play a role and be helpful, but is not reliable. Patients often can be totally asymptomatic with good visual acuity and suffer from diabetic macular edema and neovascular AMD or a choroidal neovascular membrane. So patient referral, timely referral is very important in having better outcomes.
Delay in care and disruption of treatment have significant impacts on patients with NAMD and DME. Among patients receiving intravitreal anti-VEGF therapy, risk factors for being lost to follow-up include older age, male sex, unilateral involvement, diabetes, race, and having Medicaid insurance. Let's listen to Drs. Farhina Ali and Jessica Steen review the impact of delaying therapy and steps optometrists can take to encourage patients to adhere to treatment regimens.
We know that in neovascular AMD, the earlier you catch the disease and initiate treatment, the higher likelihood there is to hold on to very good vision. And for diabetic macular edema, we know that there are long-term effects of persistent untreated edema that can translate to less good vision even once treatment is initiated. Anecdotally, we can see that more chronic fluid is a bit more stubborn to treat, and sometimes the longer-term disease process results in more exudates, which are structurally difficult to treat and not necessarily fluid or the exudative process that responds well to anti-VEGF treatment.
In neovascular AMD, we understand that a better baseline visual acuity is associated with better visual outcomes. So what this means is that early identification of disease and early treatment are truly central here.
It is extremely helpful when these patients are seeing their optometrist regularly so we can catch disease early and initiate treatment early. I think it's been helpful when our referring optometrist offices schedule an appointment with us as soon as they identify the patient needs treatment. So in other words, they're essentially scheduling the appointment for the patient while the patient is still in the office so as to not leave that up to the patient who may not really understand the severity of that need. This definitely, of course, is a little more burdensome on the workflow of the office, but I do think it can minimize patient loss to follow-up or loss to referral that can happen.
So in between the visits with retinal specialists, optometrists are still continuing to see these patients for the management of their concomitant ocular conditions like ocular surface disease or for the management of glaucoma. So what this gives us is an additional opportunity to discuss, to reaffirm, and to really reassure the patient through their treatment course. I think that reassurance and demonstration of the visual gain or stability that's previously been achieved really do go a long way to helping that patient to stay on track.
First-generation anti-VEGF therapies for NAMD and DME, including ranibizumab, aflibercept, and bevacizumab, have similar efficacy and safety, with a median durability of approximately 8 to 9 weeks and a range of 1 to 3 months. All these agents require a regimen of frequent injections and evaluations to optimize outcomes. More durable anti-VEGF therapy is needed to decrease the treatment burden on patients and to offer better long-term outcomes. New treatments aim to meet these needs. Let's listen to Dr. Regillo review clinical trial data from studies of faricimab and high-dose aflibercept.
Well, faricimab is unique because it has an added mechanism of action. Every drug we've been using to date for the treatment of neovascular AMD and DME have been anti-VEGF-A blockers, blocking the effects of VEGF-A and all the isoforms of VEGF-A. But faricimab, being a bispecific antibody, blocks VEGF-A just like all the other therapeutics we've been using, but also binds and blocks angiopoietin 2. So it's dual mechanism of action, two targets, VEGF-A and angiopoietin 2. So faricimab had a very successful phase 3 neovascular AMD clinical program. The pivotal studies, TENAI and LUCERNE, studied faricimab dosed at less frequent intervals compared to aflibercept dosed on label in a fixed fashion every 8 weeks. And it performed as well, but at less frequent dosing. And so that implied that it's more durable. So we saw equivalent visual gains in patients with new onset or treatment naive neovascular AMD. We saw very similar reductions in central subfield thickness, so good exudative control. And in fact, a recent subgroup analysis showed that faricimab actually dried faster and dried better during the matched induction phase of the clinical trials. And then over the course of 1 to 2 years, depending on the response to treatment, patients could be treated every 8, 12, or 16 weeks. In a very high percentage of patients by the end of the study, 2 years, were being managed at every 12 and 16 weeks. In fact, about 3/4 of patients were being dosed every 12 or 16 weeks, with over half being dosed at 16 weeks. So that's quite a bit more durable than what we had been seeing in practice with all the other therapeutics, all the other anti-VEGF-As drugs that we've been using. High-dose aflibercept is actually 4 times the dose of aflibercept that's FDA approved currently for neovascular AMD and DME. So in practice, we have the FDA approved aflibercept at 2 milligrams, and this high dose is 8 milligrams. So the phase 3 Pulsar and Photon studies for neovascular AMD and DME respectively are actually very similar designs. 3-arm study, it was aflibercept 2 milligram standard dose as the control arm after the loading phase, fixed every 8 weeks. And then the 2 aflibercept arms dosing up to 12 weeks in one arm and up to 16 weeks in the other arm. Now there were provisions you could vary or reduce the dosing interval down to 8 weeks, or if you're at 16 weeks, down to 12 weeks in order to control disease adequately in the first year of the trial. And they were successful studies. Both phase 3 studies met the primary endpoint of being non-inferior in terms of mean BCVA gains from baseline. And there were some pretty impressive durability demonstrated in the clinical study. For example, in the Pulsar Neovascular AMD study, approximately 79% of patients in the 8-milligram arm were able to stay at Q12 weeks through the primary endpoint, and 77% in the every 16-week arm were at 16 weeks at the primary endpoint. So we're talking over 3/4 of patients were being extended or being adequately controlled and getting results that were non-inferior in terms of vision gains to standard dose in both every 12 and every 16 weeks. Pretty impressive and good safety profile. And very similar for DME. We saw 89% of patients in the high dose arm getting out to 16 weeks at the primary endpoint and 91% in the Q12 week arm getting out to 12 weeks at the primary endpoint. And again, non-inferior visual acuity gains and very similar drying and also with good safety. Vericimab had a very successful phase 3 program also in DME, just like it did in neovascular AMD. So in DME, these are the Yosemite-Rhines studies. Identical trials looking at the treatment of center-involving DME with vericimab. And this is either treatment-naive or previously treated. And three-arm study, the control group being aflibercept dosed every 8 weeks on label, and two vericimab arms dosed either fixed every 8 weeks or a variable treatment, the so-called personalized treatment interval arm, which was like treat and extend, individualizing the frequency of vericimab after the loading phase, dosed either every 4, 8, 12, or 16 weeks through the primary endpoint and through the two-year study. And it performed as well with regards to vision gains and anatomical results, looking at central subfield thickness, as good as aflibercept. In fact, anatomically, with even better drying, both across the board on average with central subfield thickness reductions and time to drying and percentage of patients in which the study eye had complete drying. So vericimab performed as well in terms of visual acuity gains for treating DME, center-involved DME, and actually showed some benefits with regards to better drying and then, of course, better durability. Because when we look at the patients in the variable treatment arm, a high percentage of patients ended the study being treated at very infrequent intervals. In fact, about 3/4 of patients were being treated every 12 or 16 weeks, and over 60% ended up being extended out to 16-week treatment intervals. And that's quite a bit more durable than the drugs, the anti-VEGFs we've been using in practice. So both DME and neovascular AMD studies, very similar in terms of the durability and how infrequent vericimab can be dosed to achieve the same visual outcomes.
Agents being investigated for the treatment of NAMD and DME include OPT-302 and KSI-301. Other avenues of therapy currently in clinical trials include biodegradable microparticles, implants, and gene therapy. Dr. Regillo reviews these investigational agents and devices.
OPT-302 is also unique. What is it? It's a fusion protein that binds and therefore blocks the effects of VEGF-C and D. It's not a VEGF-A blocker. It's not intended to be used as monotherapy or as a substitute to VEGF-A blockade to treat neovascular AMD. So it's meant to be used in combination with a VEGF-A blocker, something like ranibizumab or aflibercept, drugs we've been using in practice. And in fact, the phase 2B study of OPT-302 was a study in which OPT-302 at two different doses was used in combination with ranibizumab versus, in the third arm, ranibizumab alone dosed monthly. All arms were dosed monthly. So you got a monotherapy ranibizumab arm and a dual therapy with OPT-302 at two different doses in a combination arm dosed monthly. And at the end of 6 months, the primary endpoint of this phase 2 study with neovascular AMD, we did see enhanced vision gains. There was a statistically significant increase in the amount of letters gained at just over 14 letters at 6 months in the high dose OPT-302 combination arm compared to about 10 or 11 letters in the monotherapy ranibizumab arm. So what this is telling us is that the combination approach or blocking all the VEGF, VEGF-A, C, and D with this combination approach might give us enhanced vision gains, better efficacy. And it's the only product in testing right now that's aiming for better efficacy. It's not a durability play. And so the phase three studies, which are currently enrolling, the SHORE and COAST studies, are OPT-302, again, in combination with either ranibizumab or aflibercept, and dosed relatively frequently in a fixed fashion, every month or every other month. And we'll hope to see, it's a superiority study, hope to see superiority of the combination approach versus monotherapy. And we're still enrolling these studies. So it's going to be at least a year or so before we have some results there. KSI-301 is a very interesting molecule. It's a full-length anti-VEGF-A antibody. So it's the same mechanism of action. It binds and blocks VEGF-A, similar to what we've been using in practice. But it's made into a large molecular entity with this biopolymer conjugate. It makes it very large, and that effectively doubles the half-life. So we're looking for greater durability. So it was tested in a phase 2-3 pivotal study called the DAZZLE study, and that's for neovascular AMD. And unfortunately, it didn't meet its primary endpoint. In the study, KSI was dosed very infrequently, every 3, 4, or 5 months, compared to aflibercept dosed every 2 months. And the visual acuity gains didn't hold up as well over time in the KSI arm, so it didn't meet the primary endpoint of being non-inferior in terms of BCVA gains. A lot of patients did very well in the study. It seemed to perform like you would expect with an anti-VEGF-A agent, but we probably pushed the envelope a little too far with trying to extend the treatment interval. Some patients probably needed and would have had better results visually if they were allowed to be treated more frequently, such as every 8 weeks. So it was somewhat of a shortcoming in the clinical study design that it didn't allow for more frequent treatment to help keep the vision gains up. But KSI-301 is also being tested for DME, diabetic retinopathy, and retinal vein occlusion. We don't have the results for the DME program or the DR program at this time. We will soon. But we did have a positive retinal vein occlusion study. So it did work well in treating retinal vein occlusion macular edema compared to aflibercept, and it was dosed less frequently. So it did imply that this drug can perform well in practice for at least retinal vein occlusion. And we'll know the results for DME and diabetic retinopathy in the not too distant future. This is a unique sustained delivery approach to neovascular AMD. So we're looking at bioerodible polymers, either as suspensions or as implants injected into the vitreous. So it's an office-based injection of a polymer as the sustained release platform. And within these polymers, we're incorporating tyrosine kinase inhibitor small molecules. If we were to inject a TKI into the eye intravitreally, it's a small molecule, it would go away very quickly, and the effect would be very transient. So it has to be packaged in a polymer that will slowly release it. And we're hoping that this gives us a true anti-VEGF-like effect, because these tyrosine kinase inhibitor molecules block the effects of the VEGF receptors. So they work intracellularly to effectively block the effects of VEGF-A and also VEGF-B, C, and D. So it almost has a pan-VEGF-like potential mechanism of action. And we see that with these sustained-release polymer approaches, we're getting some anti-VEGF effects at phase one testing so far that look to be pretty good, lasting about 4, 6, 9 months or so. There's also a suspension of a TKI that we're injecting suprachoroidally. So there's one suprachoroidal approach with a TKI suspension, and then there are two intravitreal implant approaches. The polymer suspension injected intravitreally is no longer being pursued because they had some problems with particle dispersion. So there's a few programs that are all the way through phase one and are entering or about to enter phase two testing. So this is a sustained release anti-VEGF-like approach to treating neovascular AMD. Gene therapy is the ultimate sustained delivery platform. It has the potential to provide anti-VEGF therapy indefinitely with one administration. And there are three programs in this gene therapy space for the treatment of neovascular AMD, and they're also being looked at for the treatment of diabetic retinopathy too. But all programs are looking at neovascular AMD. There's RGX-314, which is a viral vector that will give us an anti-VEGF protein and encodes for an anti-VEGF protein. And in fact, it's ranibizumab. And RGX-314 is being administered either subretinally via a vitrectomy, so that means a trip to the OR, or supraquartally, suspension injected in the supraquartal space. So there's two delivery approaches for RGX-314 to give us intraocular ranibizumab, hoping to control disease, neovascular AMD, indefinitely with hopefully little or no supplemental treatment. And so far, the phase one program looked very, very encouraging in that regard. There was a significant reduction in the anti-VEGF treatment need in patients that were previously treated. ADVM-022 is another gene therapy product. This is by intravitreal injection. So it's a viral vector encoding for an anti-VEGF protein. In this case, it's aflibercept. And this is intravitreally injected. It had a favorable phase one program and is now in phase two testing. The RGX-314, by the way, is subretinally already through the phase one and into a phase two, three program already. And suprachoroidal is at phase two. And then lastly, the newest program to hit the scene is 4D-150, also for intravitreal injection. And it's an anti-VEGF protein via the viral vector. And it is also a aflibercept, but it actually has a dual mechanism of action because it blocks not only VEGF-A, but it has an RNA interfering mechanism that also targets VEGF-C. So it's a dual mechanism of action. They're just starting their phase one program. So far, so good with regards to the safety profile and some hints of efficacy in terms of reducing the treatment need in these previously treated neovascular AMD patients.
Thanks for listening to this PERspectives podcast. If you would like to receive CE credit for participating in this program, visit our podcast page on our website at gotoper.com. Find the name of this program and click on the link for the post-test. If you like today's episode, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening.